We have a little slogan for World AIDS Day. It's remember, celebrate, educate, and inspire. That's our slogan. Mm-hmm. And the kind of work we're doing with the students is we're showing them a little bit about and telling them a little bit about what happened during the early years of the AIDS epidemic and the power that the activist movement had in really turning the tide of apathy and inaction around, and how important art was to that movement, because this is a time before the internet, text messaging, cell phones, social media, none of that existed. And so art played a very, very important role in that. And so that's what we talk with them about, that your art can be powerful and can inspire people, can influence people. And we're trying to make a connection with them in particular, since they were all living through COVID, you know, and what they've been through, missing over an entire year of school, and to tap into some of that. And some of them are doing art based on their COVID experience, which is I was really happy about. And some of them are doing HIV and AIDS, and some are doing environmental things. And it's whatever you're concerned about, whatever you're passionate about. We encouraging them, and with West's help, to use your art to share that.
So one of my questions was going to be, how are you making AIDS relevant in the age of COVID? But you've just explained that.
Yeah, no, it's totally relevant. I mean, the parallels between the early years of the AIDS epidemic and the COVID pandemic are just incredible. Misinformation, apathy, disinformation, recrimination, finger pointing, you name it. That was all part of the early years of the AIDS epidemic. And we've all lived through COVID, and we see it happening every day still. So they get it. They totally get it. And one of the things that we do is show a film that was made by CNN called The 80s. It's a series that they did. And one of the episodes in there is called The Fight Against AIDS. And it's one of the best pieces that kind of covers the whole rollout of the AIDS epidemic right through the 1980s. And students get to see news stories and people talking, and they learn about Ryan White. They learn about, you know, Ronald Reagan. They learn just about, everything. And it really, because they know nothing about it. Even West, which was really very interesting. West is 40, and he knows a little bit about what happened, but he had no idea of the scope of it. And he had no idea about the role of art. And so one of the really thrilling parts for me is to see what it's done for him in terms of, I would just say validating what he's doing. Already. And he was just on fire. I gave him a book that shows the activist art from that period. And in one of our meetings, I looked at the book and he had, and it had all these, it probably had 20 or 30 sticky notes, all in it. And he said, can I keep this longer? And I said, sure, of course you can keep it. So it's really gratifying to see that. And that's just been our experience in the 4 years we've been doing this. That's why we try to touch a number of different bases and do a bunch of different things, because not everybody wants to come to a seminar and everybody wants to come to an art opening. So we try to do a number of different things.
So would you illuminate us on some of those other things?
Sure, sure. Well, I just told you about the crash course in activist art. And we have a website at vashonworldaidsday.org. And so there's a bunch of information you can find there about the crash course. And so we built a little module, online module for students. So that's there to see. But there we have an opening on this Friday at the Blue Heron Arts Center. So it's the old building right next to the VCA. And that'll be up for a month. And that opens, we're going to do like a little soft opening at around 5, but it officially opens at 6. And West spent the weekend, and I helped on Saturday. We completely painted the room. And it's going to be nice. Jessica Dwyer is working with us. And Jessica is is a pro exhibit designer. She's done a bunch of exhibits at the Heritage Museum, designed them. And so she's designing and laying out the exhibit. So I think it's going to be good. So we got that. That's happening.
So that is the students' art?
This is students' art, and West has something. West is painting something really big for that. So this is the students' art. And beginning today, in fact, after I leave here, I'm going to McMurray Middle School. This is a project I'm really so proud of. We have managed to get our foot in the door at McMurray Middle School into the seventh grade social studies curriculum. And in social studies in seventh grade, they study Africa. And their teacher is Rebecca Blankenship. And Rebecca is a historian. She considers herself a historian in addition to being a teacher, but she teaches as if she's a historian. And we have helped them to add a module to their curriculum on Africa about HIV and AIDS in Africa, which is a significant,
yes,
significant problem now. And the particular focus is on the plight of young women and girls. The highest incidence in sub-Saharan Africa of HIV and AIDS is among young girls and women. And that's because of a number of factors. One, cultural norms, a lack of education and access to education and employment opportunities, sexual violence, childhood marriage. There's a whole host of problems that are being really addressed in a very creative fashion. But that has been added to the curriculum. And back in our first year in 2018, we brought in a couple of our own experts that we have here on Vashon, Ann Lewis and Kate O'Kane, who's been with us for 4 years. Both of those women have worked in Africa right on the ground. At the village level, at the clinic level, and I've also worked at the policy level. And so they brought a real reality to the class. It's a 3-day kind of module that they run. And this year we're doing the same thing, but a little different. And I'll tell you about it after. Looks like you're going to ask a question.
I have a question because you're talking to sixth and seventh graders, and these are very sensitive, very intimate issues. Have Kate and Anne and Rebecca been able to find ways to illustrate these sensitive topics for kids in ways that
they're very, very good. Although, in fact, I looked at the PowerPoint presentation that Kate is doing. Kate lives on the island, but she's actually in the UK right now, so
yes,
she's doing this from the UK. Rebecca asked her to remove one of the slides from her presentation because she felt it might be a little too much for her students. But the focus is really on education and what the life is. You know, what is it like for somebody their age in Africa, and what are the issues that they confront? And I just remember watching the presentation the first year we did it. Anne was telling a story about, like, what happens when you get up? A young girl gets up in the morning. She has to take, you know, she has no parents. Her parents are dead. They died of AIDS. She's taking care of her brothers and sisters. She has to get them ready to go to school. She gets herself ready to school. She puts her uniform on. She walks to school and she goes to school and she comes home and she takes care of her. I mean, it's just, to these kids, it was like, what?
Yeah.
So a lot of it is just describing what it's like, and the kids were just on fire about this. It was really remarkable. And this year, it's a similar program, but what they're doing is they're exploring the role of storytelling and music has in Africa, in the way that public health is being addressed in HIV and AIDS education. And I brought my pal Jacob Bain, who you know, wonderful musician and videographer and many other things, who went to school at Vashon here.
Yes.
And Jacob has done a lot of work in Africa and traveled a lot in Africa. And he has a good friend of his, Sona Jobarte, who is a Gambian musician, a kora master, which is a gourd stringed instrument that only historically is played by men. And her father was a kora master, and she is also an activist. And she has started a school in Gambia called the GambiaAcademy.org that she funds totally by herself, that educates young people in Gambia and tries to ground them in their own culture and so on. She was here on Vashon a couple years ago and did a concert, and I went, and it was just mind-blowing. So Sona is going to be talking with the students, and she's also a storyteller. Part of what they're doing is what the students have learned about is, I'm going to butcher the name of this, but it's called a Grot, I believe. And that's a native storyteller, somebody who's picked from the community, the tribe. I'm not really sure what it might be or what level is like an official storyteller, the keeper of the stories of the community, of the tribe, or
that's
the region.
That's a big job.
And that's what she is. And when Becky and Julie Jaffe is at the librarian at the middle school, is also working on this. When they heard that that's what she was, that they just were so thrilled because they were looking for one. They had no idea. So it all just came together. So that's just starting today. That's 3 days. They spend 3 days doing this, a series of learning experiences
with middle school kids.
And it's great. It's just really great. I you know, it can be frustrating working with young people sometimes, because you never know if they're paying attention, and you know, they go. Right. And plus, COVID has really added a whole nother layer to this that's very, very difficult.
Yeah, are these performances or sessions going to be done via Zoom? Or?
Yeah, these are all being done. What we really wanted to do was to bring Jacob in and play live. That's when he's really great. I did that at the high school many years ago. But we just couldn't do it. You just can't get that many students together at the school. So Jacob has put together a number of videos and so on, and Sona will be appearing via video, but something that she's addressing directly to the students. I'm very excited to see it myself, how it turns out, but I know it's going to be great. And Kate is doing something from the UK. I think Kate is actually appearing via Zoom. Live.
Oh, great.
From the UK.
She's a firebrand. And
she's great. She's been with us all 4 years, and I don't have to, you know, she's always like, well, what are we going to do this year? and the same with Chris. The other thing we're doing is what we try to always do is something theatrical. And we're doing a play called Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally, very famous playwright, who died of COVID, actually, at the beginning of the COVID epidemic.
Huh.
And it's going to be a stage reading at the high school theater on Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
I want to be there for that. And
we've got a really
fantastic.
Dynamite cast. Gene Doherty, Dark Keenan, Phoebe Tate, and Evan Whitfield are in the cast, and Chris is directing it. So. It's great. I consider myself the producer of this whole thing, but I've got so many great people working with me that you know, I just know Chris is going to handle this, and he'll ask me if he needs something or tell me.
It has to be inspiring and energizing for you personally.
Yeah, it is great. I just have to pinch myself. You know, I was trying to rid myself of this topic, but. I only have myself to blame for opening the Pandora's box back in 2018 and asking people if they wanted to do it. But now it's just an institution. And we had one other project that we had to postpone till next year, that it was just a little too ambitious for us given COVID. And so we'll do it next year. And it's called Why We Fight. And it's going to be a video collaboration. So I'll save that one for next year when we talk.
Well, I want to talk about World AIDS Day in general. People here on Vashon are coming to you every year and saying they want to recognize World AIDS Day every year. Who's running the show globally? Is it still going on? Who sponsors?
Oh,
that?
Yeah. No, it's still going on. It started back in 1988, so it's been around a long time, and it's referred to as a commemoration rather, you know, rather than a celebration. It's right. it's just a time to really to remember people who we've lost and remember people who are still struggling and suffering. You know, there are 37 million people in the world who have HIV or AIDS right now. And those numbers are actually starting to creep up. I mean, COVID really has complicated the whole situation. You know, for example, in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, there are 20 million people with HIV and AIDS. That's a lot of people.
It's terrifying.
And, you know, you start getting 1 or 2 percentage points of increase. And, you know, as we've all learned with COVID, epidemics, you know, don't work, you know, arithmetically, but geometrically, you know, or, you know,
exponentially.
You know, COVID has really, really thrown a wrench in that. And like in Africa, there's only 3% of the population is vaccinated for COVID. So
tell me more about how COVID has interrupted the progress they were making.
Well, it's isolated everybody, and it's made it more difficult for people to access. You know, one of the approaches is to get people on antiretroviral therapies, because we know that when you're on an antiretroviral therapy, the viral load in the body becomes zero, undetectable, and you can't transmit it. But you have to be able to access your drugs.
Ah.
And if you're suddenly can't get those drugs or have access to those drugs, then you're going to fall off the antiretroviral wagon. And if you do that, you could transmit AIDS or HIV again, and you could become ill yourself. And, so it just has complicated that. And COVID's also made it, people with HIV more vulnerable. You're more vulnerable to the bad effects of COVID if you have HIV. You
know,
you're immune compromised. And so the trick is, in the effort, you know, globally, is one to reduce the new infections and to get people into treatment. COVID just really threw a wrench into that. And you know, everybody's scrambling to fight COVID, and you know, there's just so much that people can do. So it's not as much of a problem here, but elsewhere it definitely is. However, it's creeping up, you know, here in certain communities. The African American gay and bisexual men are, you know, have the highest incidence of all, you know, of all people who you know, have HIV and AIDS, South, and the greatest incidence of new infections are in the southern part of the United States, Florida being number one. Surprise, surprise, you know.
Where people are not getting vaccinated for COVID.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not all that, but generally speaking, if you were to pick out, yes, it's the South. So that, you know, we're doing a good job in Washington State. Washington State's been very aggressive.
With both AIDS and COVID.
Yeah. So, you know, we're fortunate, but it's you know, it's a fragile, you know, relationship, as we've seen with COVID. You know, now we see these variants, you know, things. It's a dynamic environment, and unless you really stay on top of it, things can get out of control pretty quickly.
You know, in preparation for our conversation today, I went to your website, petercirco.com, and it is so fun. And I just wanted to explore some of what you're doing in addition to World AIDS Day. That's important. I want everybody to know about it. They can go to the website that you mentioned.
VashonWorldAIDSDay.org, yeah.
That I wrote down somewhere I can't find now. But what's Peter Cirko up to? How long ago did you retire, and are you busier now than you were
I retired in 2016, and a woman who's doing some editing work for me today said, I told her, oh, you're giving me too much work to do. And she said, I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes, but You can never retire from greatness. I thought, well, that's a good say. That's a
wow.
That's a good saying.
Wow.
I am currently working on a young adult novel. That's what I'm doing now, and I have to stay busy. That's kind of my thing.
Clearly,
I like to be involved in stuff. And I've discovered as I've gotten older, you know, I've kind of just hit my stride as I've gotten older. I often tell the story of when I turned 50, which is 17 years ago now, I just had this terrible dread that that I realized that more time had passed behind me than I had left ahead of me. Okay, just this, and then if I hadn't done all those things I dreamed of doing, I wasn't going to do them. And of course, what I discovered was everything I've done that's remotely satisfying is I've done after I was 50. You know, all of this has happened after 50. So. But I'm very excited. This book I'm working on, it's called Hattie's War, and it's set in the post-Civil War era, and it's about a young girl who loses her father in the Civil War, and is the youngest child in the family, never met her father, and her name is Hattie, and the young girl is my great-great-grandmother, and her father, his name is Hannibal, such a great name, is my great, great, great grandfather. And he died at the Battle of Gettysburg on the first day. He enlisted, volunteered with his two brothers to fight in the Civil War. And only one brother survived. And, his younger brother Tapin died at the Battle of South Mountain. Hannibal died at Gettysburg and Byron survived. So I'm writing a story based on kind of that concept.
From Hattie's perspective?
It's a story told by Hattie. Yes. Uh-huh. And it's great. I don't know that much about Harriet is her name. I've been to the house she lived in. I've been to her grave. I went to her grave this past summer. I know a little bit about her. I know quite a bit more about her father, Hannibal, because he fought in the Civil War. But I had to kind of piece this together. I've learned a lot about the Civil War and, I've learned to, you know, it's been great. It's just been a great, great, and I have I'm an editor I'm just working with that, that's great. Yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff on my website about it. One of the mind blowing things that happened to me in August is I acquired some of Hannibal's letters that he wrote during the war. I had no idea they existed. It was totally by serendipity that I got them.
Is there detail in there about what it was like to actually
I had hoped that there was some detail like about the battles, but there was a fair amount of detail. Yeah. There are 12 letters. Two of them were written before the Civil War. But they tell a little bit of the story of his service. And I learned that Hannibal was an abolitionist, which is what I surmised when I wrote when I'm writing the book. That's kind of what I have him as an abolitionist. And surprise, surprise, that's what he was. Because people fought for lots of different reasons. People fought because there was money in it. You could make $100 bounty. You get paid after the war was over, and you got paid, you know, $13 a month, and that was good money back then. And some people fought to teach the secessionists a lesson for patriotic reasons, and some people fought because they believed that slavery was wrong. And it's clear from Hannibal's letters that he thought slavery was wrong. I couldn't believe it when I read that written in there. It was just really mind blowing.
It's got to take you right into that time.
Oh my God. I mean, to see his handwriting.
Yes.
You know, I'm looking at his handwriting. Hannibal was a sign painter. That was his business. He had business with his brothers. And so I have Hattie as being artistically inclined. So that's an important element of the story. Yeah. So it's been really a lot of fun. Yeah. I have a hard time actually reading. I've gotten so caught up in the story. This is fiction. Uh-huh. Most of it. I get choked up reading my own story.
I can see where you would.
I read it to my wife driving home one day from Winthrop. But she hadn't read it yet, and I read it to her, and like I was both crying in our car at the end. Yeah. So anyway, it's fun. Yeah.
That's hazardous duty.
Yeah.
crying while you're driving.
So yeah, that's what I'm doing now. And
but there were many other things on your website. There's a blog.
Yeah.
Tell us about what you talk about in your blog.
Well, it's interesting. I was just reading one of my entries today. Today is the 20th anniversary of George Harrison's death. And of all the Beatles, you know, it's the Beatles time with the Get Back film out. But
yeah, right.
Of all the Beatles, I really love George Harrison. And one of the things that somebody asked me many, many years ago is like, who was somebody who influenced you the most in your life? And I just, on the spot, I just said, oh, well, George Harrison. And which I surprised me to, when I said that,
yeah.
But when I thought about it, yeah. I mean, George Harrison, I always really liked George. I thought, you know, he's a great musician, and I was very interested in what he got involved with, you know, his interest in spirituality and meditation and that whole business. To me, that was very influential. And of course, the Beatles were influential on all of us, you know, who are old enough. So, yeah, I just reread that this morning. but no, I've written about my family. I've written about... friends of my family. The last woman, one of my good friends growing up, mother died recently in her 90s. And my name is Peter James Serco. I'm named after two of my great grandfathers. And when I was born, my grandfather Jim was still alive. So they called me Jimmy. And for the longest time, there were just a bunch of people that called me Jimmy. They never called me Peter. I preferred Peter. When I went to school, I said, I want to be known as Peter. And she is the last person to call me Jimmy, you know, and I wrote this story about, you know, Jimmy has died because, you know, if I heard her say my name, if I wasn't even paying attention, I would turn around, you know, because I knew it was her. And Jimmy is dead. I think that's the title of that entry. So, yeah.
Peter Serco, you are a photographer, a filmmaker, a producer, if you will. Which of those creative endeavors, and a writer, which of those creative endeavors gives you the most satisfaction? What's the most fun for you?
Actually, it turns out writing is actually a kind of fun for me. I like coming up with new ideas. You know, I mean, all these things we're doing for World AIDS Day are like my ideas. Crash Course in Activist Art. You know, why we fight, you know, I like doing that. I don't always like doing the grunt work, but I consider myself sort of an idea person. And so, you know, occasionally I like to follow through, you know, I mean, I think that people that end, I like collaborating with people. I really like working with other people. And so the World AIDS Day is the perfect collaborating vehicle. I like doing that. I don't know if everybody likes working with me all the time because I'm not super organized. You know, I just do it. You know what I mean? I've never written it. When I did Hattie's War, I wrote an outline for the first time in my life. I haven't followed the outline, but I actually sat down and wrote an outline. When I made a film, I just did it. I just did it. You know, when I wrote my solo show, which I never performed in my life before, I just did it. That's just what I did. You know, I just do it, you know, and so.
You know, it's interesting. We recently lost Kajwin Barry, one of the most creative people who's lived
on
this
island.
Yeah. She was 94, and she was calligraphing up until a couple of days before she actually passed. But she was a good friend, and I had the pleasure of interviewing her and talking with her about the creative process. She was a photographer, a writer, painter,
a
pilot, all these things. And I remember asking her about the creative process and how she does all these different things. And her answer was, it's all the same energy. You just redirect it. And I see you, Peter Serco, doing the same thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. And one of the great things about Vashon is you can, if you have an idea, you can find other people willing to jump on board. It's just great. You know, when my wife and I thought, well, after we retire, maybe we'll move to, we have a house in Winthrop, but maybe we'll move to Winthrop, you know, and Then I thought, well, if I move to Winthrop, I won't, you know, I'll be leaving my, you know, I love this. We both love this place, but I'll be leaving my network, you know. I mean, when you've lived here long enough and you're old enough, you know, you have, people know you and hopefully people trust you and like you. And so when you ask them to do something or hey, this is an idea, what do you think? You know, they're willing to jump on board. And I'm sure I could recreate that elsewhere, but it's nice.
It'd take a long time.
It's nice. Well, I can send you an email and say, hey, I'd like to be on your show. And you say, yeah, sure. When do you want to come? And so that's hard to replicate. When I write Elizabeth Shepherd at the Beachcomber and I say, hey, I'm on this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, here at Lone Blow, you know, we get a nice article written about it. So, you know, Vashon is just an amazing place for that sort of thing. And so.
Yeah, I've often wondered, what is it about this place that attracts this huge creative community?
Oh my gosh. It's just, you know, and people are so generous and, you know, like West, I mean, he's got his fingers in, I don't know, so many different projects now that, and he's, you know, he just cranks them out. And so I'm really pleased to be working with him and now to call him a friend, and I'm glad he's going to be with us.
So we have come to the end of our time, but Peter Circle, I want you to just repeat for our listeners, what's happening here on Vashon during World AIDS Day month?
sure. So this coming Friday night, starting at 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, is a opening of a show called Crash Course in Activist Art. It's a show by Vashon High School AP art students at the Blue Heron Art Center, right next to the VCA, the old building. And that'll be up for a month. That's a hard building to get in and out of, but you could see it, you know, on off hours, I'm sure. On Saturday night at the high school, Vashon High School Theater, we're going to have a stage reading of Mothers and Sons, played by Terrence McNally. That's at 7 o'clock. It's free. We accept donations, of course. And then we have our program that's happening at Murray, just starting today over the next few days. And so that's it for this year.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Peter Circle, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here again. Good to see you.
And thank you, dear listener, for sticking with us for a half hour. It's been a fascinating half hour talking with Peter Circle about World AIDS Day here on Vashon and around the world and about the creative process. What a day. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.